Good afternoon, TGP. This is the first episode of the live, well, it's not exactly going to be live, but I am going to try to do it live, one take, In the Know podcast. This is going to be a podcast where I will basically read the newsletter to you. This is just me trying to be all things to all people. I'm trying to think about the best way to get this information in as many of our members and friends' hands as we possibly can. And therefore, I am going to take about 30 extra minutes a week. This podcast prayerfully will not be more than about 10 or 15 minutes every week, basically to go through some of the announcements of what's going on at TGP and to read through the portion of the newsletter that I write on a regular basis, which is a sermon follow-up. So I am excited about this, and I hope that it serves this church well. If it doesn't work out and it doesn't end up reaching a lot of people, I'm just going to stop doing it. I'm not going to take those 30 minutes and not do it. But I thought this is a way to get a little bit extra. You know, if you want to read along with me, if you want to listen and read, it'll be the just double whammy of newsletter goodness. But we're going to call this In the Know because the little tagline, the subline, if you've never seen it before, of the newsletter is keeping you in the know as you lead people to know God. So, without further ado, let's jump right in. First order of business is here are some announcements. Mondays through the end of July, there's a summer book club. And the book that we're reading, we started the first one actually today. And I'll actually say it's going to go through a couple of weeks in August. We're studying Kevin DeYoung's book called Men and Women in the Church. It has been a fantastic study. This one day that we've done it has been great. There's still time to get the book, read, and we're memorizing 1 Timothy 3, which we talked about today is relevant for men, women, and everything in between. I'm just kidding. There's nothing in between. There's men and women. Oh, culture. Okay. This is one of the things that you're not going to get in the newsletter, but you're going to get right here in this one take podcast. Normally, I would just go back and edit that out, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to leave it. You're going to laugh. I hope. Maybe not. There are life groups that are meeting weekly on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. That is ongoing. You can get in touch with the life group leaders or Joel Jordan, who's a life group leaders minister, for more information on that. Bibleville is happening the second and fourth weeks of each month, and preschool is meeting weekly. If you're willing to teach Bible school or to lead a preschool class, you can contact our children's minister, Catherine Christian. Sportsville has actually paused for the summer, so we're taking a couple of months off to give our servant hearts a break so that they can come back when school kicks back off and be ready to go for that semester. And then we also have Sunday school classes happening around 9:30 every Sunday, youth, college, and adult classes. All right, here is the sermon follow-up for today. I've got three sections. And I haven't completely settled in my mind about how I'm going to do this. I might just do some transition music in between to make it, you know, really hip and cool, like a cool podcast. Or I may just read those section breaks and say, hey, here's a new section. I'm not sure yet. So the first one, though, what I do in this newsletter is I try to address things that I wish I had been able to go into deeper or things that I didn't have time to get to, but that I think are still important or interesting about the text that we studied the Sunday before. So the first thing that I want to talk about is, when did God call Abram? I love when we're studying a book or story in the Bible and another person in the Bible references that story or that book and helps explain its meaning or provides further insight for us. The best commentary on the Bible is the Bible. The best way to understand the Old Testament is to read the New Testament. And the New Testament would make no sense without the Old. So a thorough knowledge of the Old Testament brings beautiful clarity to the New. Bible scholars and theologians like to call that intertextuality, which is a fancy word that means how different texts are related to one another and help explain each other. I say all of that because one of the seven men chosen in Acts 6 is named Stephen. He preaches a sermon against the Jews for putting Christ to death, just before he is likewise killed by stoning for his sermon. In that sermon, he evidences a thorough understanding of the Old Testament. And he references the very story of Abraham that we've been studying. And he does that in Acts chapter 7, verses 2 through 5. And it says this, "And Stephen said, 'Brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran, and said to him, "Go out from your land and from your kindred, and go into the land that I will show you." Then he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. And after his father died, God removed him from there into his land in which you are now living. Into this land in which you are now living. Yet he gave him no inheritance in it, not even a foot's length, but promised to give it to him as a possession and to his offspring after him, though he had no child." He brings clarity to the timing of God's call of Abram that the text of Genesis does not give. If you recall, Terah, Abram's father, took Abram, Sarai, and Lot with him and set out from Ur of the Chaldeans for the land of Canaan, but stopped short and settled in Haran. That's Genesis 11:31. So you can go look at that. If you go to the newsletter, I've actually linked that there. What comes next in the Genesis account is that Abram is called by God, Genesis 12:1, and then sets out from Haran, Genesis 12:4. It seems like this call comes after his father died while he was in Haran. But Stephen says God appeared to Abram in Mesopotamia, which is Ur, before he lived in Haran, and therefore while his father was still living. So the New Testament clarifies what the Old Testament doesn't exactly give us. God spoke to Abram before the whole trip to Haran. And so some commentators have actually speculated that Terah's trip to Canaan, which we learn about in 11:31, was actually in response to Abram's call. I tend to agree with that, by the way. I would also argue that probably what happened in 12:1 is that God either repeated the call, he called him again after Terah's death, or in some way reminded Abram of that initial call that he had made so that he set out from Haran and came finally to the land of Canaan. So it's almost like he went halfway with his father to fulfilling that call, and then he continued on after the death of his father into Canaan. Now, this doesn't necessarily make a huge difference in our theology or practice, but it is one of those really interesting and helpful places where the New Testament helps our Western chronology-loving minds to establish a timeline. And it highlights the beauty and glory of God's Word, which is never a bad thing. Let's talk for a minute about Hebrews 11 and Abram's wandering. So related to the previous, but still a little bit different, another place that's helpful to our reading of Genesis 12 is Hebrews 11. And we've talked about this a lot. We're going to talk about it a lot. Hebrews 11 is something like a faith commentary on the Old Testament. And it demonstrates that the Old Testament saints were saved and their memorable deeds accomplished by faith. It wasn't their works themselves that saved them or were even the most important thing about them, even if that's what we remember them for. It was their faith in God and His promises. Their faith in God brought them through their monumental acts of obedience. And if you read toward the end of Hebrews 11, their faith brought them through their darkest hours. And what Hebrews 11, 8 through 10 does for us is it takes that which would seem to be a skippable part of Genesis 12, namely all those places where Abram stops and camps and builds altars throughout the land of Canaan. And it tells us that all of these things happened because of Abraham's faith. His sojourning or his temporary residence in that place as he lived in tents was at every point guided and begotten by his faith in God. And think about what he was doing too. He was building altars when Yahweh appeared to him or spoke to him, and doubtless he was making sacrifices on them. He was filling the promised land with worship of the one true God prior to Israel's settlement there. He was foreshadowing exactly what would happen one day, namely that Israel would be the unique people of God in this land and fill the land, in theory at least, with his worship and so bless the nations. So the final section that I want to talk about is the relationship of faith and works. And I hope we don't get too much in the weeds at this point, but I wanted to treat it a little bit further, what I talked about yesterday. So one more issue that I wanted to treat is the relationship of faith and works. Remember, what we're after is genuine, authentic faith, which is accompanied by what Romans 1:5 and 16:26 call the obedience of faith. Authentic faith is always accompanied by obedience. Obedience naturally, logically, sequentially arises out of authentic faith. I also said that we should be aware of two imposters: obedience-less, quote, faith, and faithless, quote, obedience. Faith without obedience is not faith. The Bible knows nothing of that. Obedience without faith is not obedience. The Bible knows nothing of that. Both genuine faith and its handmaiden obedience are important to the Christian. If you remember our study of Titus, it's the gospel that makes us zealous for good deeds, Titus 2:14. 1 and 2 Timothy, in many places, talk about the importance of devoting ourselves to good works. And by the way, Titus does the same thing in a number of places. Jesus himself connects love for God with obedience. And we know love for God does not truly happen for fallen human beings apart from faith. And that's John 14:15, John 14:21, and John 14, verses 23 and 24. And Ephesians 2, 8 through 10 teaches us that we are not saved by works, but for works. And that's perhaps the best explanation we can give. Humans are not saved by works, but saved for them. The witness of the New Testament is that our simple works by themselves do not save us, but that they are important nonetheless. We have to have more than two speeds. So I think about speeds of like a car. We have, usually in evangelicals, we have two speeds: essential for salvation and unimportant. And so either something is essential for salvation or it just doesn't matter. But we can operate with a third or fourth or even fifth speed, some levels of importance that go between essential or unimportant. Works are one of those things that aren't unimportant, but they're also not essential for salvation in the sense that they save us. Works bear witness to authentic faith. They are vital for demonstrating the genuineness of our faith. They serve to assure us that we have faith, and they please God. Hebrews 11:6, without faith, it's impossible to please him. The other side of that, though, is that with faith, it is possible to please him. Faith pleases God. Authentic faith does works that please God. Faith apart from works is dead, useless, and doesn't save us. That's the witness of James 2, 20 through 26. But that's not the same thing as saying that our works save us. And that's the distinction we have to make. That's where we have to get to. Faith, we're saved by faith alone, but faith never appears alone. So obedience less, quote, faith would say, my works don't save me, therefore I don't need them. That's easy believism. It takes hold of the truth that we're justified by faith alone, but it jettisons the biblical definition of authentic faith as something that is always accompanied by obedience. It's a distortion of the truth that we're justified by faith. On the other side is faithless, quote, obedience, which overemphasizes the truth that works are important. They'd say something like, well, obedience is essential to faith, so I had better obey so that I can have faith. And they get the cart before the horse. They distort the truth by teaching that obedience begets faith rather than the other way around. The truth the Bible holds forth is that both are critical to the believer, but there's a relationship between them and a clear order that we had better not break apart. We cannot separate faith from obedience, but we know that faith begets obedience, not the other way around. For instance, Jesus says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Love precedes and begets obedience, and obedience is evidence of love. We cannot say, well, I want to love God, so I will just start obeying. That's getting the cart before the horse, and it will never work. We'll end up trusting our works instead of Christ's righteousness. On the other hand, we can't say, well, I just love God, so it doesn't matter at all what I do. That's jettisoning the cart and letting the horse ride away into the sunset. we'll end up being deceived about ourselves, and the Bible would say we don't actually love God. We must resist both these impulses and seek after authentic faith, which has true love for God and a belief in His promises, which necessarily gives way to true biblical obedience, the obedience of faith, the obedience that comes from faith. They're both important, but one begets the other. That's the biblical relationship and sequence between faith and works, as best as I can express it. So let's go into this week and believe all that God holds out for us in His Word, and let's order our lives according to it. God, build up our faith and hope and love, and let it show up in the way that we think, speak, and act. Have a great week. I love you, people. One more thing. I saved this for the end. I have a prize drawer. Yes, that's right. The official TGP prize drawer. And this week, I am offering a chance to look into the TGP prize drawer and pick one item out of it to the first three people that respond to me after listening to this. I'm not putting this in the actual newsletter. I'm putting it here at the end of this podcast. If you're listening to this, text me, email me, call me, do something to get my attention and let me know that you've listened to this. And I will send you a link so that you can look at what's there and you can pick one thing. Now, I will say it's the first three people that get in touch with me whose names are not Kate Rawls and Heath Hinskins, because they, every time I've done any kind of prize with the newsletter, they have gotten it every time, either one of them or both of them sometimes. So anybody not named Kate Rawls and Heath Hinskins is welcome to text me, and I will let you know if you're one of the top three, and you get to pick a prize from the prize drawer. Get excited. It's so fun. Have a great week. I love you, people. I'll talk to you soon.